can't decide and torn between a romantic, comedy, action, or an indie film to watch for the weekend? Well, well, well. Golden State Media Concepts Movie Podcast is your ultimate guide to the latest movies. Join us as we dissect the latest on the blockbusters. It's the Golden State Media Concepts Movie Podcast.
Welcome to the GSMC Movie Podcast, brought to you by GSMC Podcast Network. I'm your host, Stacey.
And I am your co-host, Sarah.
And today we are talking about two movies, Blockers and The Greatest Showman. There's nothing connecting those. Those are just the two we're talking about.
One's in theaters. The Greatest Showman just came out on DVD.
Correct.
So that's the reasoning behind our choices, but there is no connecting theme.
Yes. So the first movie, Blockers... I went into this only knowing the basic premise, which is that three teens make a pact to lose their virginity on prom night, and their parents somehow find out about it and try and stop them.
If it helps, there's a picture of a rooster before the word blockers.
Yeah. I didn't get that on the first view. I didn't notice the rooster the first time I saw the poster, and it was only after I saw the movie and I saw the poster again. I'm like, aha, got it. I get what you're saying there. Okay.
I see what you did there.
But yeah, so in this movie, the parents are played by John Cena, Leslie Mann, and I'm totally forgetting the third actor's name.
I'll look it up.
Please do.
I looked at the poster and I cannot. I can see it in my head, but
yes, yeah. I didn't recognize him, so it's possible I haven't seen things he's been in, and I don't really recognize the girls either. But they're younger, so it's possible this is one
right.
of a few things they've done. Going into it, like I said, I didn't know much about it, but as I was watching it, I could have guessed that this was produced by Seth Rogen, and it is, because it's that sort of comedy.
Right.
It felt at times like almost the prom version of like Knocked Up or something. It was just,
okay.
It was just like, parts were kind of funny, and then other parts I was just like,
Yeah, okay. You know, kind of that whole group, Leslie Mann. You know,
yeah, she's often in those, yeah.
Yeah, well, she often works with her husband, whose name I'm also blanking on, that he does a lot of these types of movies. And yeah, they're not quite my brand of humor.
Yeah, not mine either.
I know that people find them funny, and I'm not dissing
right.
them, but they're just not quite what I think of as really hilarious.
Yeah, there were a couple of moments in this that I did actually kind of laugh, but for most of the movie, I'm just like, this is a little ridiculous and or gross.
Right. So, why do we have to have the gross?
I don't know. So like the whole thing is they're trying to catch the girls on their prom night, and to make this, you know, actually worth like the 2 hours or so movie time, the storyline starts getting really ridiculous where the girls first go to prom, then they go to an after party, like very quickly into the prom, and then they go to a different after party. So the parents always have to keep chasing them because if they were just at prom, this would be over in like 40 minutes.
Right. I'm just going to interject here. Leslie Mann is married to Judd Apatow, who
does
a lot of
yeah.
these types of
yeah.
movies. He just didn't happen to do this one.
Right. Did you find the other actor?
Because I'm not sure. I'm looking at the list on IMDb,
okay.
and there's a bunch of people listed, but I'm not sure what I'm looking for. Do you remember his name in the movie?
He's Sam's father, but I don't remember his name. His daughter's name is Sam, so if it says her last name...
Okay, perfect.
His last name. But yeah, anyways, this... It's such a... And then, I mean, the premise for it, even that they find out, is only because Leslie Mann's daughter has her messaging open on both her phone and her computer. So when she goes off, the girls are tweeting as they're in the limo about this thing they're going to do tonight, and the messages keep dinging on the computer, so the parents go and check it out. It's just already like, okay, so we're at a kind of stupid level, okay.
Right. Part of my thing with movies like this is, I mean... Okay, this isn't a parenting blog, but have you talked to your kids about sex? Have you, you know, like, are we, why are we making this like this huge, oh my God, they're about to lose their virginity, we must stop them, instead of giving them the means to be safe, be smart, be, you know, all of those things, like, they're going to lose their virginity at some point.
Well, that does come up in the film, but the parents are kind of strange. So Leslie Mann is definitely a helicopter parent. She's very, very close to her daughter and thinks she knows everything about her daughter, so she's upset when she finds out her daughter applied to UCLA without telling her.
Oh, geez.
And so there's this sort of like, you're smothering me, and no, I'm not, I'm trying to love you thing. John Cena and his daughter have this relationship where he's very much into sports, and so he's trained...
He's John Cena.
Right. And so he's trained his daughter in like all the types of sports, but he still feels very sort of protective dad about her, but his wife is actually like... She's a grown woman. Let her make her own choices. And she brings up all those points you just brought about, you know, we can't tell the girls what to do. And why are we concerned about the girls? But we wouldn't be concerned about this if they were boys. Mm-hmm. And then the third parent, whose name we still don't know.
Well, I'm looking, and it only gives first names it on does. IMDb for the characters. So I'm not sure. There's one actor whose name is Ike Barinholtz. Ike Barinholtz. And I don't know him.
What's his character's name?
Hunter.
Maybe. That might be it.
Maybe. I mean, he's listed kind of above the... Hold on, listeners. You can't see what we're doing, but we're looking at pictures. That dude?
Possibly. His picture looks definitely... Because in the movie, he's a bit of a slacker. And John Cena and Leslie Mann are closer as the parents of their daughter's friends than they are with him. Because he ended up cheating on his wife and they just sort of like dropped him from their parent friend group or whatever.
Okay.
And he originally is trying to stop John Cena and Leslie Mann from stopping the girls because he's been a terrible father. And so he brought a limo for his daughter's prom and wants to give her a special prom night to sort of make up for that.
Oh, okay.
But he also feels somewhat reassured because he thinks his daughter is a lesbian. So,
she can't possibly have sex on prom night if she's a lesbian.
She has a male date. So he's like, she's not having sex with her date because she's a lesbian. But then when he goes with them to the first thing to try and stop them, he sees her kiss her date.
Okay.
And so all of a sudden he's like, oh my God, I've got to stop her because I thought this all wrong. But it gets very crazy very quickly. There's a scene at the second place, the first after party they go to, which is already ridiculous. It's a crazy after party at somebody's lake house with all these kids drinking and whatever. And the guy whose house it is comes out when the three parents come up and the parents are trying to look like teens. It's so ridiculous.
Oh, no.
Like at one point, Leslie Mann tells John Cena, who's very like...
Not teenage looking.
Proper, to untuck his shirt so he looks young. And he's like, I can't untuck the shirt. It looks stupid that way. Jeez. And I'm like, yes, that's what's keeping you from looking like a teenager shirt is tucked in.
All I can think of is John Cena's wrestling persona and those stupid jean shorts he constantly wears.
He's actually kind of pretty fun. Although this scene quickly becomes... I'm amazed at this kid and like the bravado he shows, because he comes up, he's like, no adults at the after. I'm like, you're all teenagers and you're drinking and you're gonna be like, no adults, are you kidding? And then he's like, are you guys cops? And I'm like, does that change anything? Because you still are being like, I'm not gonna let you in. I'm like, if they're cops, it doesn't matter, they can call the cops. Like, what are you gonna do? You're very brave for the situation you're in, man. But then he tricks them into, to prove they're like young and hip and down with it, having a chugging contest
with
a beer. But this is not a normal chugging contest. It is a butt chugging contest.
Oh, gosh.
It's gross. This becomes a thing. It goes on way too long and it's gross and just ill.
Mm-hmm.
And then shortly after that, they're trying to chase the girls down again because that thing gets broken up by the police, which is why we have to go to the second after party. And there is a vomiting scene because there must be. I don't know why. And it's gross. And
because
it was hard to watch.
Bathroom humor is hilarious.
Evidently. But yeah, it was hard to watch that scene. I definitely looked away. So if you have any sort of anywhere near squeamish stomach, maybe don't go see this. And if this is not your type of humor, especially don't go see it.
Right.
Because it's just, it is somewhat sophomoric at times. Although there was There's a couple of scenes. So one of Leslie Mann's daughter's boyfriend, they go to his parents' house to try and find her because they were told he was they were going there first. Mm-hmm. His parents are very open about their sex life, including with their son.
Okay.
So we catch those parents in their like sex games a couple of times.
Jeez.
And at one point we've come back to the house because we need to get something from the house, and his parents are both walking around naked or half naked with blindfolds on because this is their new sex game. I don't know why. To try and like echolocation to each other.
In case you haven't guessed this just from the content, this movie is rated R.
Yes, and earns that. And they've broken into this house to try and get, I think it's a cell phone or something, and they kind of get caught up in the middle of this because the two parents can't see each other, but they can touch. And so John Cena ends up getting caught by someone. Oh, and so one of the other parents comes in to play the person he's caught by. So the boy's two parents are touching two of the parents looking for the girls, but think they're touching each other. And okay. that whole thing just goes crazy. But in order to get John Cena to go into this house, this was like the only part I actually really liked of this movie because I just can relate to it so much. Leslie Mann is trying to give John Cena like a pep talk to talk him into going to this house because A, it's illegal, and B, he just doesn't want to. And she starts trying to use sport metaphors and just, like, I would fail miserably. Like, the first thing she says is, like, it's the bottom of the third, and we're down by one, and there's just no time left. And he's like, there's plenty of time.
Lots of time. You got six more innings. Right?
And then she starts throwing other things, and both the other two guys evidently know, and they're like, what are you talking about, rugby? What are we talking about right now? Do you know what you're saying? And I'm just like, yes, that would be me. Just completely messing up sport references, because I really don't know anything save for, like, yes, there are nine innings in baseball. And when you get down to sort of the end of things, in basketball somewhat, but especially in football, 4 minutes does not mean 4 minutes.
No.
4 minutes means like half an hour with all the pausing and the fall and the fouls and all that. So that's all I know for sports. But I just thought that was so great that she's just like, yeah, I have no idea what I'm doing. You need to go in there. And she does eventually convince him. And then we get the whole thing with the blindfolded sex games. Jeez. But just, yeah, it's very
sophomoric
ridiculous.
Is a very good word for this. It sounds very. And, yes. You know, again, lots of people like this type of humor. And if this is your type of humor, then you will probably love this movie.
Yeah. I mean, I was kind of looking forward to it going in. But again, I didn't know it was this sort of Seth Rogen-y type of movie. But just the idea that these, you know, really hapless parents are trying to go out and stop their teenage daughters. It's like, I can already tell this is just going to be a mess because you don't know what you're doing. And they don't.
Right.
But it's just like, it starts getting beyond the grossness. Just like, yeah, is this still going? how is this night not ended yet?
It's an hour and 42 minutes. So it's pretty typical length. But, you know, that maybe like 42 minutes too long, an hour too long.
The circumstances that are required to keep this movie going, and that nobody, like, save for the one party, calls the cops on these parents even, mm-hmm. It's just like, yeah, so, yeah.
Yeah. I was looking to see what it got on Rotten Tomatoes to see what other people think.
Oh, yeah?
And apparently I don't know how to work right. There it is. Okay, so I'm like, hello. So 50% of the audience liked it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're running about half. Yeah. Not about half. You're running at a half.
Yeah, I can see that. Because, again, certain type of humor, even if you don't have that type of humor, some funny parts, but not enough to make this worth it if this is not your type of humor.
Right.
There is, I guess there's just sort of like, all the parts with John Cena are pretty good. And his character's kind of funny. He's good at it at times, and then at other times, not so much.
How's his acting?
That's what I mean.
Yeah, okay.
Like, I haven't seen any of the other things he's done acting-wise, just because they didn't look interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't yet know how to be, like, self-referencing with a wink to the audience the way Dwayne The Rock Johnson does.
Mm-hmm.
He does that well, like we talked about in Jumanji, where he has the smoldering intensity as one of his powers, and that works so well. He knows how to do that. He's done this for a while. John Cena is still sort of learning that. So he does it to parts like there's one part where they broke into his house to try and find the address for one of the after parties. and it's in his wife's like address book or whatever, and they're sneaking around and he's like, we have to be quiet because my wife will hear or whatever. And the other idiot parent guy is like, who wears the pants in this family? And the wife is on the stairs, she's like, I do. And he's like, he like screams a little, and he's like very much scared of his wife. And I'm like, you know what, that plays well. You're this big, strong, tough sports guy, but she's the one running this family. I can go with that. That's fine. And there's a, at the end, he's running around doing things the only way he knows how to do, which is with Bron, trying to find which room his daughter's in as she's about to have sex. Mm-hmm. And so he's literally breaking down every door in this hotel. And the things he, and it's so funny, they were playing around with the what he breaks into. So at times it's like other people making out, and then at other times it's like they look like they're in a satanic cult and they've got masks and candles on the ground and they're about to do some sort of ritual. Jeez. And so it's like, okay, that's kind of funny. It's kind of ridiculous because he seems to break into like literally every door in this hotel, but that's also kind of funny when you get to some of the things you're playing around with. And then the way it ends, not the ending the scene, but the way each of the girls' stories ends, you could almost have predicted, mm-hmm. just from the beginning of knowing who they are and their personalities and their parents. Mm-hmm. And so it's just like, when we finally get to it, I'm just like, who had sex and who didn't have sex? I'm like, yeah, I knew that. I could have bet money on that. Like, I could have told you that was what was going
to
happen.
I didn't need to sit through this entire movie just to find that out.
Stupid vomiting scene. And for some odd reason, at one point in the movie, Leslie Mann's car explodes.
Okay.
For like literally no reason whatsoever.
Everything is better with an explosion thrown in.
Yeah, it really was just like, this is just, who wrote this movie? Seriously.
So Stacey gives this movie 2 big sighs.
I think I've done more than 2 big sighs.
I think you have.
But yeah, if this is, if you're a fan of that type of Seth Rogen-y humor, yeah, this is okay. It's probably not as great as some of his other ones, if you like that sort of thing. If you don't, just skip it.
Just move on.
Yes. So we're going to take a short break. Stay tuned. You're listening to the GSMC Movie Podcast.
Watching TV has changed over time. Streaming has become the new norm. That's why Golden State Media Concepts Television Podcast dives headfirst to the world of cord cutting. Want to be on the loop of what's hot in Netflix? Or if it's not a preference, what about original shows in Hulu? We've got you covered. Join us as we fill in the blanks and talk about movies to stream and what show you should be binging. This is the Golden State Media Concepts Television Podcast.
Welcome back to the GSMC Movie Podcast. Our second movie today is The Greatest Showman.
Hugh Jackman.
Yes. Has nothing to do with blockers, but here we are. The Greatest Showman is about P.T. Barnum and his show of curiosities that he put on. And it's done as a musical because Hugh Jackman in musicals, I guess.
The man's got some pipes.
I mean, yeah. I like Hugh Jackman, and I like musicals, and I like that Hugh Jackman likes musicals. But the musicals he's been in, I'm still sort of like, yeah, on so far. Although I did watch his, I did see on YouTube when he, from years ago, when he was in Oklahoma. That's kind of fun.
No, he's good. I've seen that as well.
He was great in that. Yeah. I watched that after Les Mis, because I did not like the movie version of Les Mis, and I was just like, I mean, yeah. Part of that is I'm not a huge fan of Les Mis, period, but that's a whole nother musical, so we won't talk about that one.
Well, he does a lot of, you know, I mean, he's done Les Mis and this one, but he does a lot of actual theater as well with musicals, and I think sometimes those translate a little better in theater rather than in a movie theater.
Well, in this one, interestingly, I think would be very interesting to see as a stage show, because it's set in, like, the 1800s-somethings. At one point, they have an audience before Queen Victoria, and she's actually still a young woman at that time. Mm-hmm. So that sort of gives you a somewhat of a timeline. But then the music and choreography are all very modern.
Right.
It's like at one point, even with the first opening number, This is the Greatest Show, there is at one point where it's sort of circling around Hugh Jackman, who's in the center, and it's got all these dancers on the outside, and the spotlights keep coming on and off. And I was just like, what era are we supposed to be in when you can do that with the spotlight?
Right.
I was like, what year is it supposed to be?
We don't actually have electricity at that point.
Right? I'm just like,
gas lights? Can you do that with gas lights?
That's really quick for whatever you're doing with a flame. I don't quite understand. So, yeah, and the music, especially, like, there's one number he has with Michelle Williams, who plays the character who goes on to be his wife, where the choreography looks very nice. It's, like, very much contemporary, like you'd see on, you know, So You Think You Can Dance or something. And I'm like, very pretty. But 1800s? No, I don't think you'd ever have done that. So it's very much like not following the time as far as the music goes, but then we're supposed to be in this whatever period of time. And so that can throw some people off. I think it works well if this was a stage show.
Mm-hmm.
But as a movie, it just felt a little almost too much at times. Like, really well done, but almost too well done. Like, there's a scene where Hugh Jackman is trying to convince Zac Efron's character, who's this rich society boy, to invest in his show. And they have this whole scene in a bar with shot glasses, and it's very choreographed and cool. But I spent most of the scene watching it thinking, A, it sounds like I just turned on the radio. Like, yeah, right. This is almost like an alternative song going on right now. But then B, I was like, I wonder how much rehearsal time this took for them to get this together. Like, I found myself thinking that a lot. Also, when Zac Efron has a number with Zendaya, who plays a trapeze artist, and that's, I think, they showed part of that in the trailers, I found myself thinking that a lot for that one, too, because she's up and down on the trapeze ropes, and then they're on the ground, and then they're back up on the trapeze ropes. I'm like, how many days did you have to rehearse that? Like, I'm completely out of the movie right now and just thinking about, like, the behind the scenes. How long did it take to rehearse this? Like, and I think part of that is just the music. It's like, okay, this is clearly, you know, 2017 or whatever. So I'm a little out of the story right now.
Yeah. Can I just say, though, that it's nice to see Michelle Williams in something a little more lighthearted? I mean, she's an incredible actress, mm-hmm. but she so often does these roles that are just so heavy and so depressing. And so it's kind of nice to see her in a role that doesn't make me want to weep.
I mean, it kind of does near the end, because their relationship becomes a little rocky. But she's not the most depressing part in this. The Jenny Lind character maybe is most depressing, or has the most depressing. Well, and the whole thing about P.T. Barnum in this movie, because I don't think this was the case with P.T. Barnum in real life, was supposed to be that he saw these people that everyone else saw as weird and strange and freaks and saw them as interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And so he actually at one point goes looking for them. And when they're all like, I can't, like, I'd be ashamed. He's like, no, that's great. This is wonderful. And we're going to go even further with this. So he like changes. Someone is like, he asks how much a guy weighs, and the guy's like 500 pounds. He's like, 750 pounds? That's amazing. Like, going even further, because that's what sells tickets.
I used to work with a guy like that.
That goes further or 500 pounds?
Oh, no, that goes further. Okay. You know, he would add 50 to every number. You know, uh-huh. Just, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the idea is, in this movie, they see him as sort of a, not quite a father figure, but as like someone who saw them for them. But then it starts to be he sees everything only in terms of his show and mm-hmm. doesn't start seeing the people behind it. And that's where the conflict gets. And the conflict feels a little forced, mm-hmm. kind of, because it comes up with Jenny Lind. But Jenny Lind meets his wife and children and knows he's married, but then is upset when he doesn't want a relationship with her.
Mm.
And I'm just like, but you knew he was married, right? Like... I don't understand.
What were you? Yeah. Well, we can all delude ourselves in ways that, yeah. But
yeah.
Can I just say that Hugh Jackman way better looking than the actual P.T. Barnum?
Yes. Yes, that too.
That's usually the case when it comes to these things. But
just like anyone Hugh Jackman plays, like, well, you probably did not measure up to Hugh Jackman. Just
I mean, come on. Even Hugh Jackman as Wolverine with the stupid facial hair, right. I'm still like, mm-hmm.
Well, and that Wolverine in the comics is evidently supposed to be sort of short and squat, and Hugh Jackman's like this big tall guy. It's like, yeah.
Yeah.
But this movie, it's also the storyline is sort of there's a split between P.T. Barnum, the showman and the man who created Hokum and the circus, and Phineas Barnum, who's married with two daughters and wants to provide for them and feels always sort of playing like catch up because he was like a poor tailor's boy. Mm-hmm. And the story can't quite figure out which one it wants to focus on. And so it feels like it doesn't really do either well.
Right. So it could be this dichotomy or this contrast, but instead it just kind of falls short.
Like, everyone save for Hugh Jackman's character almost feels like they got like the short end of the stick in how much they're on screen. Mm-hmm. Like, all the people in the circus feels like you all seem to have really interesting backstories that we're not really going to go into, other than that everyone saw you as freaks, congrats. And then you've got this interesting backstory with his wife, who comes from money but chose to marry him for love, and his daughters, and them being, you know, the daughters of this sort of fake showman in New York society, but we're not really going to go into that either. And then you've got this sort of third story with Zac Efron's character, who also comes from money, and he has a romantic relationship with Zendaya's character, and that whole thing gets played in because Zendaya's black, or her character is black, and this is 18 whatever.
Right.
Like, A, the relationship's not allowed, but B, even her going places is not allowed. At one point, they're dressed up to go to the theater, and she's like, I never thought I'd be able to go into a theater.
Mm-hmm.
And then that kind of ends badly, and someone calls her essentially the help. But
of course.
But it's like, there's all these other side stories that you kind of hint at and then don't really do anything with.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, we get hinted at that Zendaya, who's in an act with her brother, have this past history of, like, having to deal with racial injustice and being treated wrong. But don't really know what that is. Just assume that it happened. Like, it's there. It's history. So, of course, they were black, and therefore they were treated terribly. We're not really going to explain why or where this, like, pain is coming from. Just, it was there, and that's why. Just go with it. Just go with it. Assume that and go on. It's just like, okay. And, like, even with the other characters, at one point, when Barnum is starting to focus too much on Jenny Lind and ignore all the other people from the circus, Jenny Lind's about to give her, like, debut performance, and he's really excited, and Zac Efron's character comes up and says, oh, Tom and Letty and the others are here, where do you want me to put them? And I'm just like, so I get that those are the circus characters, but who's Tom and who's Letty? Did we learn people's names? I don't know who anybody's name is.
It's hard with casts that are as big as this, you know, sometimes, mm-hmm. to really figure out who is who and what their backstories are. I mean, that can be tricky. I often feel that way when watching such big casts. You're like, wait, who is that?
Right.
Do they have a name?
But it feels really frustrating, this, because especially with the circus performers, you really feel you don't know their name, and they're just sort of whatever their oddity is. The really tall guy, the really short guy, the really fat guy, the bearded lady. Like, you're just the thing that would show up on the show program and not the actual character, even though that's supposed to be sort of the storyline here, is he sees them as actual people. That's what they say. Like, that's actually in the trailer. At one point, the bearded lady says, you saw us for us, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You gave us a home, or something like that. And I'm like, but did he? Mm. Like, he totally somehow manages to convince these people to come in where they know they'll be, like, stared at and seen as freaks.
Right.
But better to be paid for that than to, because you'd be seen as freaks anyways. So better at least to earn some money, I guess, is how he kind of convinces them. But I'm just like,
Make better choices, Hugh.
Right.
Not Hugh. You know what I mean.
Pardon. Make better choices, Barton. But then at the end, you know, he's kind of messed up on all fronts, and they're sort of forgiving for him. And I'm just like, why?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I was in that situation, I'd be, you know, suitably pissed at you.
Right.
Because you talked me into, I was, you know, if not fine, I was okay with living my life in the shadows and trying not to attract attention at all. And you convinced me to come forward and then just sort of left me to my own devices. Yeah, I don't know. It's, again, I think it would actually look like an amazing show on stage, because the music and choreography are very much modern, and so playing with that similar sort of to like Hamilton, which is doing, you know, the founding fathers, but with hip hop.
Right.
To have
right.
that on the stage with show would be very cool.
Sisters who are interracial. I mean, they, right. you know, I mean, it's not like they don't even look like sisters. They're not even the same.
Right.
Which
yeah.
is awesome.
Which I love that in the casting. So this would also be sort of like, you know what? This is history, but yeah, not really. But yeah, just somehow as a movie, it just feels sort of not as good for me for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not quite sure why. I'm trying to figure that out. And normally I generally like movie musicals better than stage musicals because you can do more in a movie musical.
Right.
So like the whole number that Zendaya and Zac Efron have on the aerial ropes, obviously you'd have a very hard time doing that in a theater because they're literally going up and down and all around this building on the trapeze ropes. And it's like, yeah, doing that in a theater, A, probably you just couldn't, and B, insurance liability would be way too difficult for that.
I don't know. Cirque du Soleil does it.
I mean, but Cirque du Soleil is a whole circus. But like you saw that when they tried to do the Spider-Man musical and like the actor kept getting injured from the wire work and all that. It would right. be that. It would be that all over again. Right. Like, again, I spent that whole number thinking how much rehearsal they had to do for that. But yeah, so somehow, I don't know why. I like movie musicals. I love the movie musical of Chicago way more than the stage thing because they can do so much more in the movie. But this one, somehow, I'd actually really much, much rather see it on stage.
Hmm.
Although Hugh is still really good. And it's hard, I think, for Hugh not to be good.
Yeah.
And he really likes musicals. So, of course, he would, you know, really go at it in a musical. His character gets the best treatment. And he's sort of the best thing about this movie.
Mm.
So,
okay.
If you really like Hugh Jackman and or musicals and or Hugh Jackman in musicals, go ahead. But otherwise, yeah, maybe not.
Okay. Good to know.
So on that note, thanks for listening to the GSMC Movie Podcast. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Movie Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network, from movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.